This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Powering Through the Pandemic on BFM 89.9.
Hey, this is Arvind Yuvraj on Powering Through the Pandemic. And on today's show, we're talking to Johnson Uy, the CEO and founder of Epic Homes. Now, I'm not sure how many people can say they've built a house in 3 to 4 days, but that's exactly what Epic Homes does on a regular basis for the Orang Asli community and families in need. But, you know, speaking about the MCO, it has obviously changed Epic's plans for the time being, you know, but that doesn't mean the team isn't keeping busy with other ventures. They're still helping the Orang Asli community. They're still mobilizing their resources, trying to help where they can. And that's what we want to talk about today with Johnson. You know, maybe you can start by telling us, Johnson, about, you know, what was your initial reaction to the, you know, when you heard about the MCO, like, because your organization is unique in the sense that it builds homes for families that need it the most. So what were your first thoughts when you heard that movement might be severely restricted?
Well, I think we had the good fortune of having teammates that were very forward thinking. So the moment I think we caught trend of COVID-19, affecting various in different countries and whatnot, we started to plan towards that, and we were slowly like ramping up different measures in order to ensure that our builders are safe, in order to ensure that the community that we're working with are safe and whatnot, and of course the moment the numbers started to increase rapidly, we sensed that MCO was going to happen, and also that we also had to make a decision, because I mean, after all, the building of homes is for the Orang Asli community, and we didn't want to be the bringer of a virus into a community that typically would have less developed or less exposed immune systems. We had already decided to put our activities on pause probably a few days before MCO was called. And then around that time, I think that the government, through various bodies like Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli, had issued out a letter to restrict any NGOs from the outside to work with the Orang Asli people, which was understandable. And then the minister, the registrar of societies as well, banned all activities involving groups of people coming together till the end of June. And then the moment MCO happened, then that was pretty much official, sealed the deal, and everything then got frozen essentially.
Yeah. Were there contingencies in place, you know, before the announcement? Like, did you expect it to happen here based on what was happening in other countries like China and Italy?
Well, I mean, frankly, there wasn't a lot of time to prepare for this, especially since our entire operations is a large part of our operation centers around the building of homes for Orang Asli people. Because I mean, you can't just substitute the activity of building a home with some virtual or digital experience. And so that's really where I think the challenge has been. And so the immediate step that we had to take, looking at the potential numbers and our disrupted pipeline, was to look at cost control measures. So we were aware that you're not allowed to force any unpaid leave on our people, or perhaps preferably not needing to let anyone go or retrench anyone. And so we had to make a tough announcement to our team and hopefully get them to rally around it, which was really very encouraging, because our team really got behind the plan and that has helped at least buy us a little bit more time. And then besides that, everything else has been us just adapting and improvising as we go along.
So for an organization like Epic, you know, building houses for families that need it the most, what is the impact of the MCO exactly? Like, could you put that into context for us? And I don't want to villainize the MCO. Mm-hmm. Let's just like villainize like COVID-19 instead. What is the impact? What is the impact on your work? You know, what does it mean for your pipeline and for the plans you've had? And also, what kind of impact is that for the families who are waiting for those homes?
Well, I think first of all, many NGOs who are community development based would. Or capacity building base would depend on running workshops, events, programs, which involves interacting in person, especially with the Orang Asli people who, where many of them still may not have access to the internet or may not be comfortable with the virtual environment. It requires us to really go to the ground to get that done. And so obviously that with COVID-19 and the risk of spreading this virus, that was, it makes it almost impossible for us to run any of the activities that we would normally do. The other one would be from a financial or funding standpoint, where I think we were on track to. So in the last 10 years, we've built more than 160 homes now. Where this year's goal was to build 100 homes, and we were off to a pretty good start because we had already secured quite a number of homes even before we started the year. But with COVID-19, I think that a lot of foundations, a lot of philanthropists or funders naturally would steer their funds towards more COVID-19 related causes. You know, so it makes it slightly more difficult for an organization that focuses on, I think, like capacity building in that sense, or more long-term development, where the urgency of the matter is so present right now. You know, so it wouldn't just be Epic that's affected, but I believe that many, many other NGOs as well, who may not have secured a long-term funder, I think they would also be experiencing this right now as well, because the airwaves are pretty much clogged up with just COVID-19 related things.
Like a lot of organizations and startups, you've quickly like switched your focus to different areas and different models. And in your case, that means like mobilizing donation drives and focusing on channeling supplies to communities that need them at this time. What is that process like, you know, like flipping the system like that?
Well, I think quite naturally, you know, the whole goal of building homes for the Orang Asli people has been to build relationships as well. And the goal is that through these relationships, we'll be able to be more responsive to the needs that are happening on the ground, and communities will be empowered to voice out what what aspirations they're looking to achieve, and allow for urban volunteers to help achieve them. And so we had established some of these, many of these connections with the Orang Asli people and the leadership of these various communities that we've been working with. And so naturally, come the second, when the first extension of the MCO was announced, we started to get a lot of calls from our Orang Asli friends saying that, you know, they've really run out of cash, they've run out of food, and because they're not allowed to move about as much as before, many of them are struggling for food on a daily basis. Yeah, and so we got involved with that quite naturally. Instead of building homes, then it was about mobilizing resources, funds to provide food relief for these families. So that's how we really got into this whole thing. I mean, after all, what's the point of building a home when, you know, you don't have food to eat for a day? And what we noticed is that there were many players already that got involved in this whole thing who are doing amazing work. Issue is that no one was really consolidating the data. You know, so the data, Jacqua was very gracious to share their latest census with us. But that was done in 2018, and so the numbers has also changed as well in 2020. At the same time, not all NGOs may have access to this data. And so everyone pretty much reaches out to people and react to people who are reaching out to them. But there are 853. So these are officially gazetted communities. But on top of that, it's said that there's another 197 that are not officially gazetted. And so while it's great that we're all reaching out to Orang Asli communities that we know, there's also many other communities that do not have the luxury or the access to reach out for further help. And so we seek to create this collective where we would be sharing our information, mapping out different communities that we're working in so they can ensure there's transparency and also we can optimize resources or reduce the cases of redundancy as well. Of course, recently, about a week ago, the government had announced, KPLB or the Ministry of Rural Development and JAQUA, they had announced that there's an 11 million ringgit allocation to Orang Asli communities. And so that was a great announcement. But we know that allocating a budget and purchasing food that would reach each family is two separate things. Knowing where the Orang Asli live, who live in very complex terrains, it wouldn't be as simple as just buying from a supermarket and getting a Grab delivery guy to put it over there. And at the same time, there may also be discrepancy of data. And so budgets may not have been allocated for these people who were not documented. And also there would be a need for us to supplement the logistics service to kind of expedite the delivery of food to villages, because I believe that the government, they are limited in terms of vehicles, and their contractors as well may not be experts in delivering these things. Yeah, and so this collective seek to kind of identify all these different gaps through the collection and mapping of data, and then find different NGO partners who could then fill up these gaps and then be able to share with one another what we've covered so that we know where to refocus and rechannel our resources and our expertise.
Right. We are on the line with Johnson Uy, founder of Epic Homes, talking about how they're continuing to aid the Orang Asli community during the MCO while making sense of the pandemic themselves. We'll be back in a bit. BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Powering through the pandemic on BFM 89.9, and our guest today is Johnson Uy, founder of Epic Homes. We're talking about working with the Orang Asli community during this time and the challenges of doing so when movement is highly restricted. You briefly mentioned the 11 million ringgit that was allocated for JAQUA and the Orang Asli recently. That, you know, that must have been like a huge sigh of relief for you guys. But from the sounds of it, it sounds like it can only last like 2 weeks, you know, and this MCO, it might not even end on the 28th of April. It could be extended. We could be working from home well into May, maybe even June, who knows at this point. So how do you plan to keep that momentum going, or how do you plan to keep that supply steady?
Yeah, so there's more than 50,000 families based on the census. Or let's say if you place it at 50,000 and it requires 100 ringgit to sustain a family on a very basic level for 2 weeks. So basically that 5 million, the first allocation is only for 2 weeks. And that's why the 11 million would cover them for approximately a month. Only challenge is that they allocate 100 ringgit for each family. But there are some families which are smaller, which is fine for them, so they would have a surplus. But there are many families that who would also have much bigger families as well, where their resources wouldn't last them as long. And as external parties, we could only hope that there's some process of sharing that will be taking place, which I believe is happening in some communities. But some of them also may not. Some of it may not be happening as well. To us, it was definitely a relief that there is some allocation being provided. But as you've mentioned, we may see another extension, or we need to plan for another extension. And that is why, even while there is a budget available, we are, all of the NGOs that are within the collective, we are still raising funds. So not just to supplement those that's fallen through the cracks, or communities that has not been mapped officially and had a budget allocated to them, but in case extension happens, we as NGOs can also supplement these other families as well.
You know, the other thing is the government recently issued a stop work order for NGOs and organizations from physically dealing with their communities. Obviously, for everyone's safety, obviously, they had everyone's safety in mind and to, you know, stop the spread, stop the infection. But how does, you know, how are you working around those issues? Like, how are you tackling all these, like, new restrictions?
Right. So, I think, first of all, as NGOs, I think we do understand that from a health perspective, it would be better to limit exposure for the Orang Asli to perhaps like our mainstream urban population, and I think that's really where the stop work order is coming from. But yes, it does make things complex. But you know, being part of the collective as well, there's been many methods being shared, you know, to speed up the process and make it possible for food to arrive in these communities as fast as possible. So, I mean, first of all, from a conventional method, that's getting a third party to deliver food directly to communities. And so we've actually established a collaboration or understanding with Jabatan Kemajuan Orang Asli or JAKWA, where should there be a need to distribute these goods, especially to hard-to-reach areas, then their officers or they would deploy their own vehicles to transport these items. Yeah, and so whatever that we've packed or whatever we've purchased is would then be sent to their local office. Of course, as Epic will help coordinate with the local office. Once it's delivered there, they pack it and they deliver it to families. But I think that we've also seen really ingenious methods, such as the one that COAC Rally and Impian Malaysia is deploying, where through their network of community champions, they call it something else, but pretty much their liaisons in or community organizers in each of the villages that they know, they pretty much empower them with the resources and then allow them to organize and purchase those things and transport it to their own communities and determine what's required. And then they send the picture of the receipt, send pictures of what's happening. Everything's pretty much above board. And they receive things a lot faster while also allowing the Orang Asli people the dignity of choice to determine what is best for their community. Because whatever that's been determined by a central body may not be 100% suitable for the communities that they're sending stuff to. We've also seen other methods where someone would pay, Global Peace Foundation had paid the local grocery shop, and they would then inform Orang Asli champions to then go to the shop and then take the goods based on whatever that's been paid for, so they can self-mobilize, especially in really far away areas. So I think we've been very, very fortunate that we had invested and have been investing in developing a tech platform. And so the moment that a lot of our physical events and activities got frozen, then we need to find a way to repurpose our people. So it's an impact platform that allows to provides tools to different change makers or impact makers, where they can manage their volunteers, they can raise funds or crowdfund, they can map out different communities that they care about, and they can also track their hours and track their achievements that they've done in volunteerism. So besides the collective for Orang Asli, there's also many other campaigns that has been started by many people, NGOs, as well as individuals who are raising funds for their neighborhood, for PPEs, people hosting an online concert where they're doing it from home, and they raised like 11,000 within two hours, you know, on all these sort of activities as well. Yeah.
I think a good way to cap this interview would be to talk about what's next, because we don't know when the MCO will end. And even if it does, we don't know what our new normal is going to be or how that's going to happen. So what are your plans for like the next few weeks or months or indefinitely?
Yeah. Well, I mean, going to be honest with you, I think that we started the year with many plans and things that we wanted to do. But of course, with MCO and COVID just hitting all of us by surprise, you know, all that plans get thrown out the window. And so we've pretty much been in firefighting mode. And I think this would be for many other companies or many other NGOs or social enterprises as well, where we've pretty much just been trying to stay afloat and try to make sense of the situation itself. So I wouldn't be able to tell you like what's going to happen long term, because I haven't even found the time to think through that. But in regards to what we're working on right now with the OA, the Collective for Orang Asli, I believe that what we're seeing right now is for the first time being able to share data on a public platform. We're starting to see different organizations come together and work together. We're starting to see cross-sectoral collaboration. And so this is something that, you know, as EPIC, for the last 10 years, we've been trying to champion, trying to get corporates, civil service, and civil society to work together to achieve, to solve some of our problems. And we're starting to see that happening now. I think it may not be optimized yet, but we're starting to see that happening, where we're working closer with one another and closer with the government as well. And so like looking forward, of course, in relations to not just the Orang Asli, but if you're talking about working with marginalized communities, once we overcome the stage of providing relief, there will be the stage of recovery that we need to start planning for. And I think that's where the mindset is at this point in time. How are we going to get people back on their two feet? You know, to many of these people who their bread and butter may not be there. Companies would be shutting down. You know, how do we give them greater access to opportunities? So many of these things are things that they would typically already face, even pre-MCO, but it's all just amplified because of this pandemic. But I suppose that the opportunistic side of me is also looking at what can we, you know, now that the board has been resetted, you know, how can we plant new seeds? How can we do things differently? You know, because I think today more than ever, people are a lot more open to explore new things. Because whatever frailties that you see in the systems are things that we've been doing that doesn't work in this particular environment. And I believe that we would have the chance to influence that for the future.
Johnson, thank you so much for doing this, man, and stay safe.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. You too.
Right, that was Johnson Uy, founder of Epic Homes, talking about continuing efforts for the Orang Asli community during the Movement Control Order. This interview is also available via podcast on the BFM website, which is bfm.my, or you can stream it via the BFM app, which you can download for free on the Apple App Store on Google Play. Alternatively, we are also on Spotify. You can find us there under the podcast section. This has been Arvind Yuvraj on Open for Business, Powering Through the Pandemic, BFM 89.9.
Powering through the pandemic on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.